Live on digital radio, colorfulradio.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Mr. Royal.
Yes, it's Andre. I'm so sorry. So sorry. Woke up late. Cold out here in Chicago. You're going to need that comfort if you pass out. Oh.
Of course, I didn't realize you were in Chicago. I was thinking you were in sunny California.
Nah, I'm in Chicago filming Empire, and it's goddamn cold. Cold as hell out here.
Yes. Yes, you may as well be in New York. You may as well be in Iceland. Chicago's freezing.
Iceland, yeah, it's worse than New York. It's worse than New York. Iceland is more like it. It's a windy city. The windy city be blowing.
Well, exactly. Wow. So, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I got my little coffee and my scone. Turn on my phone and like I missed it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I like that. Coffee's going. You're actually sounding more French and European. You should be saying pancakes. What are you talking about?
My name is Andre. I got a little Genetech quiet.
Oh, this makes me feel better. This is good. Okay, so this is Jacqueline Malcolm here on Colorful Radio, and I am extremely excited. Now, you know Colorful Radio, we always bring you the best of the best, and today we have with us, I am losing my breath here. We have with us Andre Royal from, his portfolio is too long to list, but let's just say for now, we'll say things like Callous Hands, we'll say The Wire, we'll say Empire. Welcome, Andre.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thank you for having me. It's good to be on Colorful Radio. I'm a colorful character, and I appreciate I appreciate the attention from across the borders, over the seas.
Oh, my gosh. You make waves wherever you go, believe me. Seriously, I've been looking into you, but to be honest, I watch so many of the shows that you're in anyway.
Well, I appreciate that. More to come.
Yes, I hope so. It hasn't stopped, has it? Because following your career path, first of all, why did you select acting? Did you already know that you were going to be this successful at it?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I knew that I was a type of person, I'm the type of character that, you know, I put my back against the wall and I understood that it was going to be all or nothing. But I was leaning towards, you know, it might be nothing, but I'm going to have fun doing it. Right. And so I was happy and blessed and humbled that people, you know, started to appreciate, you know, how I portray a character, how I craft my craft.
Yes.
And it's exciting to know that people are out there saying, you know, they like my work. You can never really think it's going to happen, but you can only hope and put yourself in God's hands and say, you know what? You gave me some talent. I'm going to do what I do, and let's see where the chips fall.
Well, you know what? I mean, I definitely want to talk about your characterization and how you build your characters, because let's be honest, you have played some pretty dicey, pretty challenging roles that a lot of actors would have just gone to the negative stereotype and give us something that we've seen over and over. But you seem to have this magic where you are giving us a character regardless of whether he's on drugs or he's a bit shady or, you know what I mean? It's like you're not giving us any of the stereotypes. So in a minute, I do want to talk about that. But when it comes to you finding these parts and these roles, I mean, you're saying that you hope that enough people, you know, recognize your work. Now, okay, so I'm going to mention just some of the shows that I know that in the UK is huge here, so I know they'll definitely would have heard of it. But you've been, you know, and I'm talking like character roles, not like you're just in out one episode. But like you've been in Fringe, Criminal Minds, Law and Order, Terminator, Heroes, Hand of God, which is like, what? You know what I mean? Let alone The Wire, Empire, and we're going to be talking about the film Callous Hands. So How do they find you? Because this is broad. I mean, you're not just going down one track, one stream. You're getting called from all over Hollywood, New York, London. How is that happening?
Well, I feel like, you know, and I, when you read it out loud like that, you know, it catches me off guard because I kind of forget, for me, there's so many in between time and, you know, people might not know, but after The Wire, you know, I didn't work for a couple of years because people thought I was a real junkie, you know, so there was space in between these roles. But at the same token, you know, people just started calling me and reaching out to me because of what you said. They were saying, look, I'm looking at my character on paper. I know on paper it might come across maybe one or two dimensions. And this is why this is such a, acting is such an art form that it takes a team. I need the writer. I need the cinematographer. I need my co-stars. And the one thing they say they want from me is to come in and give layers to my character.
Right.
And when I read a script, you know, the first thing I do is I see what you put on the page, but then I got to look at that character as I'm looking at myself in the mirror. And we all know, you know, we got our dark days, we got our good days, but I think overall, as a human being, if we really say that we grasp the understanding and definition of humanity, I think every character feels like, to me, is trying to do something with the positive good nature. And sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we get jealous, we get evil. Sometimes somebody pisses us off, you know, and I feel like, you know, when you look at that and you say to yourself, look, nobody's perfect, but everybody's trying to be perfect. That's how I look at my character.
I love
it. You know, so with that said, you know, people just started coming to me and saying, hey, guy, you know, I could go with this, you know, I could go with the, you know, the main actor that's hot right now, or I can go with somebody who's really going to not just steal the light of who the star is, but what's the story about. You know, I think a lot of Hollywood goes from star fucking and forgets about storytelling. And, you know, with me, you're going to get more storytelling. And if people resonate to me as the actor, that's just the gravy on top.
Right. Because I tell you what, you have this, I keep calling it magic. It really is genius way. And it's very understated, which I love. But you have this way of making us understand the characters that you play. So even if you're playing someone that, you know, society would call a monster, like Bird in Calloused Hands, it's like you have this way though of letting us understand that, you know, you give us that thing of, well, you know what, but if I was in his situation, if I was going through that, well, maybe I might react the same, you know what I mean? And how do you approach your characters by not judging them in the first place? Because surely, you know what I mean? You can't judge them. You can't see them as a bad person.
No, you can't. I mean, that's rule number one. Anytime you look at, I mean, for me at least, every time I look at a character, again, I don't make any judgment on what they are. My reaction is, why are they doing what they do? And like I said, you know, those, if you're really honest, there's a really, really big difference in who we are, who we want to be, and who are we being right now. And I, you know, it's about the why, not about, you know, it's about the how come. And I really try to, you know, lay most of my, you know, craft on the how come, because we all know we watch movies and I wouldn't do that, but we really
would. Yes, exactly.
We put in that position, we might just fall running from a slasher. We might just trip because we're so goddamn scared.
Exactly.
We don't know what we're going to do. We just know how we feel we should do.
Yes.
And that's easier said than done.
Exactly.
So, you know, so when I get in the character, especially like Bird, you know, the Bird character in Calloused Hands, you know, I'm a parent. My daughter just turned 19.
Right,
just started
Stella.
College. I'm going through the emptiness syndrome. I'm acting out because I'm so lonely. But when she was little... When my daughter was little, she was like, you know, I was like any other dad. I wanted her to be, I wanted to find a thing that she could be successful in so that her life, in my mind, could be easier. And, you know, sometimes parenting, we push too hard. Sometimes we go, you better practice every day because that sounds like the right thing to do. But we forget that our kids just want to have fun at first. But we don't really recognize that. We go, out of fear, we go, The hell with fun. This can make you a lot of money. Your life can be
exactly.
And then we have references. We have the Serena Williams father. You know, we have Tiger Woods' dad. So we see that pushing does work. But we forget that you have to know your kid first before you start pushing. And I don't think parents, I wasn't doing it. And I was so happy that you portrayed this character, because I feel there's a lot of parents that might not know the difference, that might not give themselves a chance to know their kid before they start pushing them, because it's a force of nature. It's what we do.
Right,
we want
exactly.
the best. It's things like that where I try to, again, look at the person, not for who they are, but why they're doing what they do. And if I can get a hold of that with any script, then I can start putting together my layers, putting together my beats, and then working with the director, and then talking to the writer, and really collab and say, where are we going with this? How do you want to portray this? What's your beat? What did you think about this scene? And then let me put my layers in. And I love that. I mean, one of my first television experiences was something like The Wire, where it was a full collaborative. We all were in it together. We were in Baltimore. We was in the hood. We looked out for each other. And I take that kind of a life lesson to every role, to every character. I'm not just some star sitting in a big honey wagon by myself. No, I'm with the DP. I'm with the director. I'm with the co-star. Let's do this together. I can't do this. You know, I'm not doing a monologue. I'm not on stage by myself. I need all of this to work.
Right.
If we really appreciate and want to give onus to the story.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's what I found as I was reading through the various, interviews you've done and the words you've put out there. You're really strong into teamwork and collaboration. I mean, you repeat that over and over and over. You leave the egos in the, in the locker room, and then you just get on with the job at hand. So how do you approach it when you're finding that maybe the star or there's someone who isn't collaborative? How do you get around that? Because that's got to happen sometimes.
Naming
names, of course. I don't want to get
names,
in trouble.
You try two different things. I mean, everybody has their own methods. You know, for me, I really like to sit down with it. When any star I feel like is really being selfish, I either one, try to sit down with them and just bond with them. But that, I know there's a fear. I know there's a fear when the camera's on you. You know, I know there's a fear when you feel people are watching. You want to be at your best.
Right.
And I get that. But I want to make that person know that, I'm going to help you. You don't have to look at me as a deterrent. I'm going to help you be at your best. Because you know why? I'm going to bring my best. And once I bring my best, we're going to play a team sport right now. I'm going to pass the ball. I'm going to assist. That's the first way I try. The second way, I go, then if you're really not going to listen or you don't want to make the time to bond or you don't feel like you need to, then I'm just going to just do what I do. And if you don't keep up, ain't nobody going to see you on the screen. And that's up to you.
So there you go.
You do what you got to do. But I got to show you that I'm, when you see me, you're in the corner somewhere. Because you're doing 18-hour days. You're doing 16-hour days.
Yes.
If you want to sit there by yourself and be egoed out, you're going to see me at craft service, eating with the director, hanging out with the writers, and we're going to have a good time. Time is going to pass easier for us than you. You want to sit there and be left out, then just be left out. But I can't, I can't wish that on anybody, because it's a very lonely situation when you're on set and you're so in your head with your character. You really want to, get a release and make sure that, you feel like, all your people are with you on the same page.
Right.
So, I feel like I get it from my mama. I got a good personality. I'm a little charismatic. I'm a little funny. I can make everybody. I can galvanize the team. We're eating the same pizza. There ain't no money in this one. So let's have fun. Let's do what we do.
Right. That is fantastic. Yeah. And it sounds like that you kind of approach your life the way you approach your characters. You know what I mean? So clearly this is just part of your character as well, that you can always go to the why. Okay, someone's being egotistical because they're feeling nervous, because you go to the deeper cords rather than it just being, you've just got a big head and you're just trying to show off.
It's always deeper than that, because that's too general. I mean, you don't need, if I feel like you're just looking for that, then you don't need me to do that. I don't need to really subject myself to 18-hour days and getting into a headspace if you just want somebody to show the emotion, not have the emotion. I'm right. more about having the emotion, not just showing it. So,
right.
you know.
So, I mean, but where did...
something...
Where did this actually... Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but where did this come from, this weight of character and understanding? Well, I mean, I'm one of those people, I fall asleep watching Dr. Phil. I love characters, I love people, I love personalities. Yeah. And it kind of sounds like, you know what I mean? You kind of get that as well, that we're all made up of a real person inside. So
I'm going to have to give that credit all the way to, and I'm sure everybody, in wherever they're born or wherever they grew up, you know, they probably have the same, you know, the same kind of connection to, you know, your environment. But I grew up in New York. I grew up in the Bronx.
Right,
I used to ride a train with my dad to work every day. I used to hang out in the clubs and pass out in the train, come home late or early morning. And I used to see people. I used to people watch and see people on these trains. And I used to make up stories in my head like, nobody looks happy. Everybody's going to work, but nobody looks like they're happy where they're going. So why are they doing it? If you tell me when I was little, I could be anything I want to be and dreams come true. And then I'm on a train at like 8 a.m. in the morning seeing all these people. I'm like, are they going to where they want to be? Are they going to, are they doing the job that they dreamt of doing it? And they're not. I ask myself, why? Why? Well, if that's not what you want to do, then why are you doing it?
Right.
Maybe because you have responsibilities. Maybe because you gave up. Maybe because it was too hard. And I look at these faces and I see it and I imagine, you know, myself in these situations. Would I make that choice? Would I give up? Is there something that would have made me say, I can't do this anymore? And I play these scenarios in my head all the time. I'm an only child, you know, so I sit around my room by myself looking at my mom and dad. Wonder why they had me. Wonder why my dad, you know, is doing construction when he wanted to be a dancer. What happened? You know,
and I'm very that is fascinating.
You know, I'm very observant. I'm very communicative. I talk a lot, as you can tell. I'm a catty patty.
It's
I
wonderful.
Like
you are a presenter's dream, believe me. You're talking to me. Yay.
I love it.
That's
fantastic. I love listening. Yeah, I love listening. I love hearing people's stories. And I feel like, you know, for me, it kind of connected with the acting where I would hear these stories and I just put them in my file cabinet. And I was just like, I'm going to remember certain things.
Yes.
I remember the way that person, you know, eyes watered when I brought up something. I'm going to remember when, you know, somebody laughed at a situation that I might not have thought was funny. But why did they laugh? Were they laughing because it's funny or they were uncomfortable? They didn't know what to do. And I just saw all these emotions, all these reactions, and I try to find a place for them when I'm reading the script.
Right, it totally shows. Because like I say, you always bring a character. I mean, the characters that you seem to play are always on the edge. And like I say, could so easily be stereotyped, but, and yet you never do, which is absolutely masterful, which is, you know, fantastic.
Well, thank you. You
mentioned Stella going off to university. So what are your dreams for Stella? Because I know that you're saying about, you know, pushing her in one direction. But
oh, man. Well, now I realize, you know, she's 19. She just started school. I've come to understand and realize that, you know, she is her own person. This is the time where I'm supposed to fall back, you know. and you know, my mom told me a long time ago that the hardest thing about parenting is you have to allow your kids to make mistakes. You know, we have that double standard where we go, it's okay to make mistakes. You learn from mistakes. And then when a kid makes mistakes, you yell at them. What
yes,
do that
we
for?
Punish them.
What's wrong with you, you know? You know, we just can't help ourselves. That's how we are.
So true. And, you know, so true.
Parenting is hard. And so now, you know, what I want her to be, or my aspirations for her, is to just be a good person.
Right.
Because I can't dictate. I can't judge on what you want to do. I can't judge on what you find important for yourself. All I can say is just be a good person. Just do what you're doing because you want to, not because you feel like you have to, not because you feel like, you know, you're going to be judged if you don't. I need you to be strong, a strong individual and a good person at heart. And then whatever's going to happen is going to happen. That's all I can ask for.
That's a fantastic foundation for her to take forward, isn't it?
I'm getting a little weepy eye right now. I miss her so much.
You're really missing her, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going through it. It's my only daughter. I'm going through it right now.
I think you'll be going. You'll be visiting her at the dorms quite a few times, won't you? Just to say hi.
I did already. I've been blocked out. I went there too far.
Not allowed.
I went there like three times. She's like, you just dropped me off there. Get away. Stop.
That's hilarious.
You
know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. So, okay, so had you not gone into acting, what were your other options? I mean...
It's so funny because I was just talking to a director. There was a film that I was, was going to try to do, but I couldn't do it because of my scheduling with Empire. And, we sat down and we just talked, and she asked me the same question. And it's so hard because I was that type of character. I am that type of character. I put my back to the wall. And when my parents said, you can be anything you want to be, and I said, okay, I want to be an actor, then that was it. There was no plan B.
Oh,
there was no safety net. There was, it was like this. If this is going to work, it's going to work. If it's not, I got to find out. And acting is one of those careers where you can never really find out because you can never, it's not a career that you age out. It's too small, too tall, not smart enough. It's one of those things where you're always one role away from your world changing. So if that's the case, true. I'm just going to continue trying until... I can't try no more.
Exactly, until the phone stops ringing. True. But it doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon.
And the only thing that I got close to doing outside when I was in New York, I think it was right before my first movie, Shaft. I wasn't working. I was doing a lot of theater, which I love. Mm. But theater, off Broadway, and I was, not making no money. I was eating pizza.
There's no money in theater.
And wifey was like, I'm pregnant. And I was like, they can't eat pizza for a long time. They can't eat pizza for at least, 2 years. I can grind it up, but they can't eat it. So I got to get a job. And I did take the fireman test. I think that was the closest I got to thinking outside of acting, I was going to be a fireman.
Oh, wow.
And,
save lives.
That was the closest. Yeah, I felt like that was kind of really, really important. Especially in New York, there was a lot of, in the project, there was a lot of fires here and there, Lower East Side. And I was like, that might be a good thing for me. I'm helpful. I could be, I could be funny and entertaining in the firehouse and crack jokes. And then I can go out there and do something that,
really
that
good.
Helps other people.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant.
So that was the closest I got.
So, it didn't happen. Yeah, the phone started to ring and kept on ringing.
Yeah, exactly. And I was a little too skinny, I found out, in the physical. I also found out I was a little slight of weight.
Have had to get in the gym and buff up a bit.
Yeah, I didn't want to do all that.
So now you're saying that you love theatre, because, my passion is theatre. So is there a role that you would love to play that it hasn't come to you yet, whether in film or TV or film? Is there a role that you're just biting at the bit to play?
Yes, there is a role that I'm biting at the bit to play that I'm, I guess right now, putting it into the universe, and I'm working on trying to make my new dream or new character a reality. Mm-hmm. And that would be James Baldwin is where we're going. Hopefully,
James Baldwin.
Yes, James Baldwin, the author. He's just a real, real. I think in this time of day, it's a character that just spoke his mind and really, looked at the world without judgment. And at first, ran away from what was going on with the African Americans in America and left to London, but realized he had to come back and join his brothers. Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, and understood that he had to join the fight, even though it wasn't asked of him, because he felt, in truth, we are all connected as human beings.
Right.
And knowing that his fellow brothers were suffering and going through so much, he couldn't find it upon himself not to be a part of it.
Right. I mean, if anyone's going to play that would be you. I could see it. I could really see it.
Thank you so much.
Have you got people out there writing it? Let's put the energies out there. Some writer out there, start writing right now.
we got the writer. We're putting the puzzle together. You know how you dump the puzzle on the table? I got a couple of corners put together. Now I got to put this middle part, which is always the hardest and the most the roughest part about it. It's just, staying part of course, being disciplined and working it all out, no matter what obstacles coming your way. because that's just the nature of how I do things. So
right.
If I put my mind to it and it's in the universe, hopefully it'll come through.
Yes, the two kind of meet, don't they? It's like you're not negative at all. It's like I can really see that. You put your positive energies out there. I'm sure you have your bad days, don't get me wrong. I'm sure your wife would be the first to tell us he has his bad days because she knows you more than anyone.
Bad days and they made whiskey for that. It's beautiful. They made whiskey for the bad days. It does help out. A spoonful of whiskey makes the medicine go round. This makes the medicine go down.
Yes, yes. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I used to say Jack Daniels is always my date when I'm miserable.
He's my bestie.
He's my bestie. Yes. I love it.
I always tell Jack Daniels we can hang out. Just don't take no selfies. I don't want nobody seeing this. Just drink it out. Let's just share a moment.
Yeah, you don't want to wake up in the morning and see your face plastered all over with your bestie.
Come on, Jack. Stop taking selfies, Jack. Don't do it, Mr. Daniels. This is the moment of being you.
Brilliant. Oh, that's too funny. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so now you also, in Empire, you play Thirsty Rawlings. This sometimes speaks to me like it's almost like it was a character that was meant to maybe come in and out a little bit. But you delivered so well that they've just made the character even bigger? Or is it that, you know what I mean? That it's like, well, it's such a staple character now because he's got something so powerful to say always, even though he's a little bit shifty.
you say shifty, but if you're my client, you say brilliant. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Like, exactly.
Only people that find me shifty and shady are people I'm not representing. Because whoever I'm representing, they find me magnificent.
Exactly. Like, I mean, again, you see, because you didn't go for the stereotypical lawyer. You're a person who we can actually see and we can imagine being in a room with him. So what kind of background did you... Go on.
I give that credit. You know, Danny Strong, Lee Daniels, you know, they called me up one day. I was in the middle of prepping for a movie I did called Hunter Gatherer that I love, another independent film. And they said, look, we got this character, he's a lawyer. We want him to work hand in hand with Lucius Lyon, Terrence Howard. And, you know, Terrence Howard is that type of actor who's very emotional. He gives a lot. He shares.
Yes,
I think we're cut the same cloth as far as giving to your fellow actor.
Brilliant.
So, you know, I don't know. If they said, yo, we want this to work. We want this guy to be like the conciliars. You know, he's right there. Lucius is his right hand. But they don't know if it's going to work until we see it. But once you put me and Terrence on camera, we just connected. We look like we're two dudes that get each other, understand what the end goal is, and have each other's back. And I think it happened kind of quicker than they thought.
Yes.
And once they saw it, they said, good, this is a keeper. Let's keep this going. As much as we can, let's keep this going until you know, with television, until we feel like we want to get dramatic and it might not happen, or maybe maybe there's a spinoff.
Who knows?
When it comes to me and what I put on the screen, you know, I want to give everybody options. You know, I want it to make sense to the story. I don't care about, I don't want to say I don't care, but I don't want to be subjected to wondering what the audience and how many people like or don't like. I want it to make sense for the story.
Right.
And then I say, let the chips fall where they fall. If the story means that I, you know, move on and do my own thing with Thirsty, or Thirsty, you know, gets in some trouble, that's up to the story writers. I think I need to be honest. But, you know, my job is to help Mr. Lucius Lyon out. That's all I think about. Help the Lyon family.
Regardless of what it takes, what you have to do, what you have to say. But you get the job done. Get the job done. So in your career so far, has there been a character that you've really found difficult to portray?
Hands down, you know, the more difficult, I think the better I do.
Yeah.
So I would say hands down, it was Bubbles. I mean, I knew nothing about
In the Wire.
There was The Wire and playing Reginald Cousins, aka Bubbles.
Yes.
That was, you know, again, one of my first TV experiences. It was playing, you know, on paper, a junkie, which can easily in my mind, I didn't want the character. I didn't want to go in for the audition because I just felt like a stereotypical character that I didn't know, you know, I didn't know who David Simon was or Ed Burns was at the time. Right. So I was like, the stereotypical black junkie in these people's hands, I don't want to be a character. I don't want to be some just like,
right,
you know,
exactly.
misfit. You know, Mr. Ragdoll running around on some comic relief. You know, I didn't want that. And then I had to look at, like, I just saw Sam Jackson murder that type of character. I'm like, beautifully crafted the character Gator in Jungle right. Fever. So I was like, wait a minute. I don't think I can do any better than Sam Jackson. So if I can't do better, then what's the point of doing it? Like, I want to be able to put my name on a character and right. own it and say, wow, I was one of the, you know, I did this character well. And I didn't, at that, when I first got the audition, I didn't believe I could do that. I thought Chris Rock did it in New Jack City, Pookie, and Sam Jackson did it in Jungle Fever, Gator. Right. I don't want to, you know, put myself underneath those two guys. Wow. But then when I met David Simon, I met Ed Burns and heard what they explained to me what they were going with the story. And the story sounded so fantastic. The story sounded like, yo, it's never been done before. We're talking about 40 black characters with roles,
right.
you know, with something
right.
to say. We're talking about a vision that we've never seen from the outside looking in, and the American dream and the nightmare and the hypocrisy of the drug war and all that stuff. I said, okay, let me be a part of this. And once I went into, you know, Baltimore, I had some time. I was in Baltimore for like a couple of months, and I just did what I did, you know, do what wow. I do as an artist. I did my research, and I started talking to all these people. I mean, I talked to at least, you know, I don't know, 50 to 60, maybe even 100 people throughout the day talking
Brilliant.
About, you know, people that were addicted, people that got over the addiction, people that, you know, are slipping back and forth. And when I talked to all these, you know, these people dealing with the addiction, I just felt they were all human. I just felt like they
this
all
is
were
it.
Just, there was no, like, gimmick. There was no cliche. Act like a junkie 101. But, you know, I didn't see that. I saw people trying real hard to be the best person they can be.
Yes.
Under this addiction. And we all have our vices. We all have our thing that we do every day, our own little, you know, we're all addicted to something, some, you know.
Exactly.
In
yeah,
some way.
We've all got something.
Yeah.
But we don't
yeah,
stop
so
being
what,
who we are. Which is what I
exactly.
think is what is so masterful about what you do is that you bring first the character. It's like you decide first the character without their vices. And then
yes,
it's
right.
like then
yeah.
you add the vices on, then you add the issues on and allow your character to go through those emotions rather than you, the actor, going through those emotions. You know what I mean? Which I think it's just.
You know what? I just want to take you wherever I go. I just want you to come with me. I'm going to be like this. This is what I mean. Tell her what I mean, baby. Yes, exactly. So I just need you.
I'll go on to your four now.
Yes. Yes. If that guy, what's it called? Keegan was Obama's interpreter, the angry interpreter, Luther, you're going to be Andre Royo's interpreter on artist craft. Tell her what I mean, girl. Let them know what I mean.
That's hilarious.
I appreciate it.
But no, but you articulate yeah. it very well. Very, very well. This is brilliant. So now we do need to talk very quickly, not too quickly though, about calloused
yeah.
hands. I mean,
yes.
how did you even approach? Because now the reason, let me first of all say for the people who are listening in, the reason why we're talking about this, of course, is because it's now coming out on video on demand and DVD next week here
yeah.
in the UK, the 23rd of November. It's going to have its big release date. So congratulations on that. I mean, I think
thank you so much, and thanks to the UK for really, you know, getting behind this film and giving it a chance for more people to see it. And, you know, yeah, tell them all the particulars, and then we can go into, you know, my experience with the film.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so we know that Calloused Hands is about really focusing on the 12-year-old boy, Josh, who, you know, is a promising baseball player, but it goes into his life behind the scenes, his family life, being deserted, abandoned, you know, really neglected rather by his mother, and then
yeah.
ending up being abused by his mother's boyfriend, Bird, which was played by yourself. And
yeah.
what I love about this film, of course, is that it was all very much a true story based on the director's experience.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jesse Quinones. So
there you go.
How?
I really wanted you to say his last name before I did, because I didn't want to mess it up. That's why I was like, tell him all the particulars. Please say the director's name.
Yes, please say it. Yeah. Well, I've had to write it down phonetically, because otherwise I'll never be able to say it. I'm like, oh no, what's that say? So, yeah. I mean, like, how, I mean, because there you are with the director, and now you have him being portrayed as a young boy, and you're needing to bring the story to life in a very truthful way about something very painful that you went with. How was that for you, having to portray that?
It was, I mean, for me, it was a psychological and spiritual rebirth in humanity and in storytelling, because, you know, this is now the age of social media, right? And I'm just hanging out in L.A. trying to get the next gig. You know, I'm with my daughter. And I'm with my daughter while she plays soccer. I'm the dad getting kicked off the field, like, go ahead, kick the ball. Would you kick the ball? See, I'm that dad. Me and my daughter are going in, and I'm like, yo, you got to try. Kick the ball. Just try, God damn it. You know, I was that kind of dad. And I'm doing all this, and I'm sitting around sweating, talking to my buddy Jack Daniels, like, I don't know what to do. I want my daughter to succeed. And all of a sudden, you know, somebody calls me or somebody texts me like, yo, there's somebody looking for you on Twitter. It was like random. And I'm like, what? Yeah, you know, and I go on Twitter, and Jesse's like, hey, I don't know, I got this script. And I'm like, all right, well, send me the script, man. You know, I'm always looking for a project. Send me the script. Let me just read it.
Wow.
And I read the script, and I'm looking at this dad bird or this stepdad bird yelling at this kid about baseball and pushing and pushing. And I just felt like, oh, wow, this is like somebody reaching out. Like, spirits are saying, you need to at least, you know, think about this script because you're going through it yourself.
Wow.
And I said, all right, well, let me set up a meeting with Jesse. And then I set up a meeting with Jesse, and he's in L.A. at the time, and we talk. And I just was blown away that, you know, this young man is going to really put his story on blast. Like, he's going to write this story about what he went through, and he's going to put it on the screen for the world to see. He said his mom was mad as hell. And he's like, look, my mom is mad, but I got to tell this story. And I just saw in his eyes that this was something he needed to do also to relieve,
himself,
you know, his spirit and his, you know, going to see a psychiatrist. He needed to work this out.
Yes.
And this is the way he was going to work this out.
Oh, my goodness.
And for him to look at me and say, I need you to help me do this, I'm a human being. And I'm like, look, you know what? This is so weird, but I'm not doing nothing right now. And I'm, you know, since I'm not doing nothing right now, it means it was meant to be that I got time to do this. It ain't about the money. There was no money. I'm eating the same pizza. I didn't care. I was like, you want me to tell this story? You need my help as a fellow human being, as a fellow artist. And you know what? Secretly, it might help me too, because I just yelled at my daughter. I just got kicked off the soccer field. It might help me too.
Right.
We just went for it. And when I got to Miami, and I'm looking at this man, and he's, you know, he's trying to direct, and I'm trying to make sure I'm truthful, and I'm trying to make sure while he's behind the camera, I'm trying to see, is he okay? Is this too much pain? Is this too much reflection? And we really sat down together and said, yo, I need to go through this. So you do you. You make Bird come to life. If it gets too painful, I'll yell cut.
All right.
You tell me if it gets too painful, yell cut. Other than that, let me go and let me tell you how I see this character. Let me show you, you know, what I feel about, you know, parenting.
And the why and what was it?
And what drives him.
Yeah.
And we just did it together, man. And I think it just made me, you know, I came back home after we did it, you know, and, we talked about it. We were like, yo, look, it's an indie film, man. It's an indie film. When it comes to indie films, you don't think about it ever coming out. You're just doing it because it had to come out. It had to come out of you.
Yes.
So we just did it.
It's a piece of
art. We had a beer and we left Miami and I came home and I was a better parent. You know, I was able to check myself a little more because I grew. You know, every role you do, Bubbles is with me forever. Every role I do, if I do it the way I'm supposed to, it makes me a better artist and a better human being.
Right.
So that's how, you know, Callous Hands came, you know, into fruition. Daisy Fuentes was, Daisy Haggard was awesome. The kid, it was like one of his, like, maybe first or second, maybe it was his first feature.
Wow.
But that was wonderful because he's looking at me like, yo, you that guy from Hawaii? Oh, my God. My mom looks up to you. My dad looks up to you. I'm like, well, you know what? Let me show you why you should look up to me. I'm your stepdad. And we just bonded. It all just fell in place. And I think, you know, Jesse, I think he did a great job because I think there's something about the bravery of putting your, you know, your world and your life on blast and for the world to see and the world to judge. Like, some people might say it's a good movie. Some people might say I didn't like it, but it doesn't matter. You told your truth. And that's the responsibility of any artist. Tell your truth.
Tell the truth. And tell your truth, exactly. And I think the way you portray Bird, and I mean, like, if he was going to give that into anyone's hands, I think he gave it to the right hands. And I can only imagine that must have been such a healing process for him. Because so many times, you know, people, especially children, when they've been abused, they're left with that massive why. And just the very way you approach your characterization, you always go for the why first. And so I'm sure that that must have given him so, I wish Jesse was here right now so I could ask him, you know, but it must have given him so many answers to the possible whys on why it happened to him, why he went through this, why his stepfather was thinking this way, so, and what his stepfather was going through at the time. So we're really excited. So I can only encourage everyone listening in here on Colourful Radio, please make sure you go out 23rd of November. Make sure you order it. You can order it on Amazon, Google Play, Opera TV, Sony Entertainment. There are so many platforms. There's no excuse.
I love it. Go through my truth. Right? Go through my truth.
So many platforms to get this video on demand of Calloused Hands. Well, you know what? This is all the time we have. I cannot believe we've already run out of time. Thank you so much for your time, Andre.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was late. Tell everybody I was late because it's cold in Chicago, and I was drinking my coffee and eating my scone, trying to warm up. But I'm so happy to be able to talk to you guys. I'm so happy to talk to you and meet you.
Like I said,
Now I got your number on lock. I'm gonna call you before I go to any interview. I might have to give you a call first. Like, yo, how do I say this?
I will herald you first.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. And don't worry, we are going to be following your career right here in the UK. You have got a major load of fans out here. We can't wait for you to come to the city.
Thank you, baby. I'll be there soon.
Okay, awesome. Bye.